The Off the Ball podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station. Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Now then, welcome back. As a Virgin Media TV customer, you can now enjoy classic weekends of sport with some of the most memorable wins, losses, triumphs and upsets all on Virgin Media Sport. Usually we'd be watching some Champions League there on an evening like this evening, summer's evening, knockout stages. So to give a nod towards that, what we would usually be doing at 7:30, previewing those games, instead we're going to pick out a favourite Champions League moment. We have had David McWilliams, we have had Neil Mellor, we've had Ken Doherty, we have had various people come on and pick out their favourite Champions League moment or memory. This evening, it is the turn of one David Mellor. Hello.
Joe, how are you?
Very well, how are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Great to have you with us. So we were going through various people to get on. As I said, we've had everybody from The Economist, David McWilliams, to Neil Mellor, who, as I'm sure you will know, as a Liverpool fan, knotted the ball down for Steven Gerrard in the Olympiacos game, the Take a Bow Son game. So the great thing about you is that you have gone through a very successful Premier League career, professional career. I think a lot of players who go through that sort of lose the sense of being a fan a little bit, to be honest, because it's an industry and, you know, they see the reality of it and they just lose some of the romance. I never got that sense with you at all. You were a Liverpool fan and you very much remain a Liverpool fan. And when you were playing at Anfield, it was very much a Liverpool fan playing at Anfield.
Yeah, definitely. I think that is something people forget. It's like, why did I get into football? You know, I started playing as a young kid, of course. And then I started supporting Liverpool, Steven Gerrard. Of course, being from Cork, Roy Keane and Steven Gerrard, my two favourite players, they were the ones I wanted to emulate. They were the ones I wanted to be. I was very fortunate. My dad took me over to games in Anfield. I loved it. I do get it that, like, when you turn professional, you do lose that sense of a fan. Some lads do, because it strictly becomes a business in a way. But I've never lost it. You know, I still go to watch games, you know, when I could. Obviously, it's a bit difficult at this time, but I always loved it. You know, just going to a stadium, getting the atmosphere, everything about it, it's amazing.
Shortly after your retirement, we sat in here and we had a chat, and I do remember you saying that Steven Gerrard noticed you as a player, as an opposition player, singing "You'll Never Walk Alone," which cracked me up.
Yeah, we played at Anfield, and he obviously, as people are well aware, I'm close to Jordan Henderson, and Jordan said it to me after. He just kind of said, like, what's he doing? It's amazing, you know, as a Liverpool fan, when you get the opportunity to play at Anfield, even as a fan going to spectate, and you hear "You'll Never Walk Alone," but to be on the pitch going up against them, something special, you know, something you cherish and something you think about, because when you look back, when it's all over like it is now for me, those are the moments that you remember.
Your favourite memory then is ultimately the final and the celebrations afterwards, and we'll get to that in a second. And this was the Spurs final. But just to jog people's memory, my real firm memory of this season from last 16 on was increasingly a sense that City were going to win the league because they had just got such a head start and they were just so brilliant. But Liverpool really were about to blossom into what we have now seen this season, and we saw it in cup football. They felt from way out as real contenders, if not very close to being favourites for the Champions League. I felt that season. They had Bayern Munich in the last 16. They had Porto in the quarters. The semi-final we might touch on as well, the Barcelona game. But somewhere around last 16 quarters and ahead of semi-final, this team looked like they could beat anybody in Europe. What's your memory of that period post-Christmas?
Well, I've always said that Liverpool, like, if you take out this season, if you go back to before they won the Champions League, I've always said that Liverpool were a European team. They could just put in massive performances on one-off occasions. Obviously, look, I don't care who you support. If you look at Anfield and European nights, it is special. It's the same as, like, you know, Celtic. They're special venues to go for games. And you know players and you see managers talking about, you know, the occasion and the atmosphere after. I always felt they were like a European side. They could never do it regularly, and it was like, it's, look, if you look at this season, it's obviously that Jurgen Klopp has found what was missing. I do know, obviously, I'm quite close to a few of them, that Jurgen actually used to set training at specific times to match Champions League football. So they would, if you look back, obviously they had the Champions League where they won, the Champions League they lost, the Europa League they lost. But before that, he was actually making them train on Tuesday nights to prepare for when they got back into the Champions League, that they were doing like full on like 11v11 games. That was like to make the players understand, like, if you want to be in the Champions League and you want to be successful, we need to be able to go hard on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night and then be able to recover and play on a Saturday. So they were, I think he had a plan in his head of where he wanted them to go. And it's no wonder that obviously they were unfortunate in two European finals, but then obviously to win the third one was huge.
Yeah, that's amazing. So even in advance of them being in the Champions League, he was getting their bodies ready to that rhythm.
Yeah, that's like what the lad said to me was, it was daft because, you know, you'd be talking to one of them in the afternoon, just catching up or whatever. And he said, I've got training. And I'd be kind of, why are you training at this time? And he said, the manager's got this thing that he wants us training, that when we're like European football, that, you know, the turnover, we're just prepared and we're ready. And look, I know the Europa League's a Thursday, but then you look at that long run, you know, obviously losing the final and then the Champions League, losing to Madrid. And then, you know, you can see it. Mm. It was almost as if he was building a European team, but, you know, they just kicked on from last season. Obviously, they were very unlucky to lose the league to Man City, though.
Yeah, well, Man City was just frankly ridiculous. And it's a totally fair point about Liverpool being a European team. Like, it always struck me as amazing that Alex Ferguson, in this kind of unprecedented, unrepeatable almost period of 20 years of absolute domination, effectively, as close as you can get to it, only managed the two Champions Leagues. And Liverpool come along, if you take 05 through to 2018, and part of a wider period where they don't win a league at all, they managed to equal what Ferguson managed to achieve with United. This knack, this ability to win European Cups is absolutely at the club. Like, the 05 thing is just a bit mad. It's a total anomaly.
Yeah, obviously there's been games been showing on TV at the moment. They're showing classic games. And I actually sat down, I think it was a week or 10 days ago, and I watched the 05 Champions League. And you just look at, like, Liverpool were completely blown apart in the first half. That AC Milan team was incredible. And then how they mustered, you know, the three goals back, I don't know what it was, 12 minutes or something along those lines to get back into the game. But how they turned that around is just remarkable. And then you touch on Ferguson, you probably say that Man United team that he had was probably a league team. Like, you've often seen some of the ex-players saying they won a lot of their games in the tunnel, that when, you know, when teams came to Old Trafford, they were probably just set in stone of winning the Premier League all the time. Mm. That was probably, I won't say that Liverpool have said, like, we're trying to win the Champions League, not the Premier League. You know that they're trying to win both, but it almost feels as if Man United were like, we'll get the Premier League first and we'll see where we're at then in Europe, whereas Liverpool probably said, we want to win both of them, we'll stay in them. Do you know if that makes sense?
Yeah, no, totally. So the semi-final is the 4-0 at Anfield. It's Origi, it's Trent Alexander-Arnold's corner. It's just the most insane game. Are you at that? Are you in Anfield for that game?
Do you know, as I spoke to JP a while ago, I turned to my wife and said, I've got something on later on. And she says, what are you doing? I said, oh, we're talking about Liverpool and the Champions League like last year. And she says, oh, the morning of the game, I woke up and...
Oh, no. This is not going to be good.
Yeah. Jordan had rang me and says, I have a ticket for you, whatever. I'm close with his wife or whatever. So, like, he says, you'll be up with the wife and that. And I was like, grand, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And the time just kept cricking by. And I was, like, thinking, they're not going to do it. I was like, oh. And then my wife had me doing a few things. And I just said, do you know what? I'll just leave it. And I stayed at home and watched at home.
Oh,
I can't believe it.
Wow.
I was jumping around the front room, but I was just thinking the whole time, like, I should be there.
Yeah.
I had no reason not to be there. Like, I had the all clear from the wife. Do you know what I mean? She had everything on lockdown here in the house. And I just said, they have to score four goals. It's going to be hard work. Do you know, I think it was Firmino and Salah were missing. I was like, it's not going to happen. And look, it's one of those I don't talk about much because I'm gutted I missed it.
I mean, it's only one of the, it's like the in the top five greatest Liverpool games of all time, guaranteed forevermore. But listen, I'm sure it was nice to sit on the couch.
I probably go as far as it's in the top the top greatest Champions League comebacks of all time.
I wanted to say number one, but I feel like it's sacrilege to say that. I mean, it must be, it's got to be close to one for Liverpool.
It's certainly up there. Of course, Liverpool fans will say 05 is probably bigger because it's the final. But there's always that big debate, what's bigger, 99 or 05? And then people say, like, Liverpool, you know, Man U scored two goals in whatever it was, a minute and a half, 2 minutes. But, like, you know, Bayern Munich scored after, what was it, 10, 11 minutes. So, like, they had the whole, you know what I mean, they had 79 minutes to equalise. And then you look at, like, Liverpool were 3-0 down at halftime, so they had 45 minutes. I know they won on penalties. But it's like, Liverpool fans will pick them, Man U fans will pick them. Yeah, it's there's no point. I've one friend who's a diehard Liverpool fan, the majority of Man U fans, so it's just an endless argument.
You spend the evening of the Barcelona win sleepless all night looking at the ceiling thinking, oh my God, what have I just done? And then we get to the final and this is Spurs, this is Liverpool. These knockout stages were amazing as well. Like, these were the knockout stages where Ajax beat Juventus and we got to see De Ligt and Frankie de Jong and these players emerge, And there was the Spurs, Manchester City extravaganza. Just spoiled the kind of madness we're not getting now. So Spurs make it, Liverpool make it, and I had forgotten this till I just started thinking about it in advance to talk to you. This was the build-up. There was like a 2-3 week delay, and we got an unbelievably flat final. There's no two ways about it. It just didn't happen.
I think it was Liverpool's game plan. I think they just wanted to narrow the pitch, shut up shop. I think they tried probably to play a bit more open the previous year against Real Madrid and got, you know, obviously got cleaned out. I think they were going to say, we're going to wait for you to make mistakes. I remember, like, I was sitting in the stadium, like, watching Harry Winks was just more or less running the game. And I was thinking, somebody's got to get close to him. I know Liverpool got very fortunate with the penalty early on, whether it was a handball or not. What is a handball these days? But it almost as if they had a game plan and they stuck to it. Like, if you remember in the build-up, there was that big talk of Harry Kane. He was coming back from an injury. And I remember we were sitting in a pub before the game, and I was going to say, if I was playing for Liverpool, I'd want Harry Kane to play. Because I almost feared the dynamic of, you know, Moura, Son, and those type players that could cause Liverpool a different problem. There's no doubting Harry Kane's ability as a player, but everything is kind of more or less in front of him. And when Harry doesn't get the ball up in or on the box, you'll notice he actually drops quite deep, where you're almost like a midfielder's picking him up. And look, there's a case for how fit was he. He was obviously fit, but he wasn't like match fit and he wasn't match sharp. So he's Spurs' best player, so you have to play him. But it would have been a lot more interesting to watch, like, you know, Son, Moura and those play up front, because it would have caused Liverpool a totally different problem.
How quickly do you get from where you're watching the game in the Metropolitano Stadium, which looks amazing, by the way, on TV, I'm sure it is. How quickly do you get down to dressing room and get to be a part of it? Are you in any way, and I'm not saying you should be, by the way, because I know you're really good friends with Jordan Henderson and, you know, Andy Robertson. Are you in any way queasy about going into that sacred space of the dressing room, or is it open season?
I never got near the change room. I don't know the sides of the stadium, what the names were, but where the tunnel came out, we were on the far side. I was with in the family and friends section. We had to loop around the stadium, but we couldn't get down to the pitch. And then it basically turned into a big shit show, because, you know, obviously the players who just won the Champions League, they want to get their kids on the pitch, they want to be with their kids, their wife, you know, their mum, the dad, or whatever. Obviously Virgil van Dijk, being 6'5", he was able to actually reach over and pick up his kids, and then it became a big hoorah because his kids were on the pitch, other people's, you know, want to get their kids, and then the security were like, no. And then eventually they kind of left the children on, because they were all quite young, I imagine between 2 and kind of 6. But we were actually just back. We were just back from the celebration, so we didn't actually like get down to the change and we get onto the pitch. It was only after we went back to our hotel, and then we jumped on a bus and went to the team hotel for after party.
Sorry, so you got to the after party at the team hotel. What's that like? Is that an intimate affair, or are there hundreds there?
Hundreds. I'd probably go as far as saying 1,000 people were probably in the room. It was just ridiculous. And the worst thing is, like, everybody is like so happy in the room. Don't get me wrong. Like Liverpool won the Champions League. You're there with all the players and all that. But the players came in. They were coming in drips and drabs because they've been to their room. They probably wanted some alone time with, you know, their mum, the dad, their wife, the girlfriend, the children, just to kind of take it all in. But then they come down to the after party. There's quite a lot of Liverpool players actually don't drink. Obviously, for different reasons. Some are Muslim or whatever, right? So they don't drink. But like, the players were quite in a flat. You could tell that the emotion of everything had taken over them. So like, I'd say within an hour, like they started to head towards their bed. And it was just kind of the friends and family were left over. And do you know what I mean? It was weird, but it was nice to see them. I got a picture with the trophy or whatever. I remember I got some stick on Twitter because somebody said like, what are you doing with the trophy? You're not meant to touch it if you've not won it. And I was like, well, I've never played in the Champions League. I'm not going to play in the Champions League. I'm never going to win it. But I've just watched my mate lift it and three other of my pals win it. So I'm taking a photo with it. So it's good. Good times.
Yeah, no, it sounds absolutely amazing. Is that the night as well, and I'm speaking off a memory of our previous conversation, where Kenny Dalglish almost half alludes to the fact that they were looking at you around the time they were signing Henderson as well?
Yeah. So Jordan's wife, Rebecca, her father, Neil, is a big Liverpool fan. And like, he's just like besotted by Kenny Dalglish. He was his favourite player growing up. And he always said he wanted a photo of Kenny Dalglish. So obviously I've been with him for the whole game. We were well jarred. And I just seen Kenny Dalglish out of the corner of my eye. So I said, come on, Neil, let's go. And I beelined over, and that's when I said, Kenny, how are you? And he was like, blah, blah, blah. And we got chatting, and he was like, oh, what could have been if, you know, if I'd taken the two of you from Sunderland? And I said, oh, geez, now's not the time, don't start. But I was trying to get a photo for her dad. And we just, look, it's a story that of what could have been. But look, sure, I think everybody is one of those stories.
The stadium you mentioned there, it does look incredible. The atmosphere that night, like, was it a bit special? Sometimes those finals have quite a corporate feel. What was it like on the night when you were at it?
No, it was amazing. Obviously, like, with Liverpool scoring so early on, like, the place erupted. If you probably talk, like, first half an hour, the Liverpool fans were just completely, like, screaming, shouting, singing, everything. And then it just kind of went a bit flat because I think they expected Liverpool to kick on and, you know, create more. And then the way the game was being played, they were a bit deep. And Tottenham then, their supporters started to, you know, gain some rhythm and were chanting and cheering and whatever. And then it was only when Origi scores the winner, just like the sing songs. But it was just, it's one of those moments that, you know, I've always said I wanted to do it as a fan. And I did do it as a fan and I loved it.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. And that whole campaign really was just extraordinary. I think that's where you like, all of us totally understood that whatever magic Klopp has, it's real. And, what you know, the club was transformed. It was obvious. What do they to finish on? And I don't want you to betray any confidence at Jordan's or anyone else's, but what sense do they give you of him and of working under him? Because every player says, God, who don't play for Liverpool, like Steven Gerrard even says, I'd love to have played under Klopp. What comes across when they talk about what he brings to the team and to the squad?
It's almost as if he's brought them all together as one family. He's obviously the father figure, being the manager. He seems like, even the times I've been lucky enough to meet him, he's just the kind of a fella you want to go through a brick wall for. Do you know what I mean? He's got your back. Do you know what I mean? When you see after games, he comes on, he's giving like hugs and whatever. It's affection. And I imagine at times players will have different problems. He's kind of that manager you could go to. I remember I was at James Milner's charity ball a few years ago with my wife. And one of the prizes came up was to be Jurgen Klopp's assistant manager. And I actually bought it from my dad. The best way to sum him up would be, even after the Champions League final, I bumped into him. And look, I've always had this weird thing that, yeah, I think it's a respect thing that I have, that I actually call him boss. I don't call him Jurgen. because I'm used to when I get introduced to him, the people I'm around call him boss. So it's just kind of like I say, I'm not going to call him Jurgen. I just kind of feels weird. So I called him boss, and I was congratulating him on winning the Champions League. And he actually asked me how my dad was. And then he was like, oh, your dad is crazy. He was shouting and roaring at everyone to come on and we need to win this game. And it was only a charity match and whatever, like, you know. But it just, that was kind of like, this man cares.
Yeah.
He's smart. He's intelligent. He understands. He listens. So he takes stuff in. And it was, it was just a nice touch. I'm there congratulating him and he actually asked me how my dad was.
And he's meeting a lot of people. It's easy to forget that. So you bought this for your dad. So at James Milner's charity match, your dad was Jurgen Klopp's assistant manager. Why have I never heard about this? And can we get your dad on the phone to take us through the full 90 minutes? This is incredible.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, my dad, you know what my dad's like.
When was this? How many years ago did he do this?
No, it's not. It's not. I'm going to say I bought it maybe 2 years ago,
right.
And it would have been. I'll get you the exact details. And it was. It's just funny because Jordan had bought his best mate Ryan a chance to play in the game.
Okay.
So my dad. So Ryan is telling me one side of a story because he's in the change room with my dad, and. My wife is very close to Mika Richards' girlfriend, Sophie. And I remember I bumped into Mika and Mika was saying, geez, your dad's like mad. Like, and I was kind of like thinking like, why, what's he done now? But I just kind of get it from a GA background. My dad was like, he was in the change room and Jurgen kind of said to me, you can give the talk. Like my dad was like swearing, like it might be a charity match, like, but we're here to win. Like, and he was walking around slapping fellas on the back and all this, like, and like, it was just, hearing it off different people, because my dad said no, it was fine. It was,
yeah.
You know, everybody was nice and whatever, and we went out and we played the game. I like, do you know what I mean? But everyone else is telling me, he was like, come on, like we need to win, like this is so important, like, do you know what I mean? He's treating it like an All Ireland final.
So. Smashed a hurl over the table. Listen, yeah. Amazing stuff. Always good to chat to you. Thanks so much.
Thanks
for doing that. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
You too.
That is David Myler there giving us his favourite Champions League memory at the 2018 Champions League win. And remember, there may be no live Champions League this evening with Virgin Media Sport, but they are airing over 10 hours of classic games each weekend.
The Off the Ball podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.